Okay, you are ready to go.
I'm ready to go. All right, I'm starting a few seconds early because you'll see. First of all, let me give the date so future generations will know this is May 4th, 2020. And I spoke with a student of mine yesterday from the 60s. Actually, he worked for Jack's daughter. He was her lawyer, your daughter, I believe, in Efrat. He was her lawyer. For whatever she was doing, he provided legal work for the first 2 years that he had come in Aliyah. And I spoke with David Gleisha, and I said to him, could you imagine you would have told me in the 60s, Rebbe, the day will come that you will give a shear to a screen. I said, I would have left you out of the class. And here I am. Yesterday I gave a shear to the screen. Today I'm giving a lecture to the screen. All right. I also want to mention, it's very hard for me with the emails coming in. First of all, I thank all the nice words. I'm overwhelmed. I don't want to read the emails to you because it would be too much boasting, I would say. And chas v'chalila, we don't want to boast, but I'm very moved by your kind words. All over the world, including Perth, Australia, was the latest email. It's very hard for me to answer. I don't have any secretarial help now. So I can type with one finger, one sentence, but sometimes it requires more. And I just want to mention a few things now that I consider important. Yehuda Gerbera, who puts out a podcast on Jewish history, very capable, fine young man. It gives me joy to see the new generation taking over. So he gave a talk on Far Rockaway. And he mentioned some of the Rabbanim of Far Rockaway, including Rabbi Nachman Wienerman's Rabbi Nathan Bulman. And Rabbi Nathan Bulman, his whole life is very fascinating. But I just want to mention two things about him. I knew him quite well. I spoke when he came in Aliyah. I actually spoke at the Malapa Malka welcoming him. And he was a YU graduate out of the, essentially out of the 30s, where he studied in Yeshiva Shvatzchol Chanan, where you are studying now. And you should know that he said to me a number of times, the greatest Rebbe he ever had was Reb Shmuel Belkin. And that should be recorded when you write about Rabbi Belkin's life, and I hope one day it will be done, Be'ezrat Hashem. He made a great mistake becoming president of Yeshiva University, at least from that point of view. Read his collected writings where they put together some of his letters, or read the Rakefetz Washington. I quote one of those letters where he exited, he's shaking when a Talmud writes to him, Dear Rebbe, when he's been president and hasn't given a shiur in years. But that's Rabbi Nathan Bulman, what he had to say about Rav Shmuel Belkin. I also want to mention about Rabbi Nathan Bulman that man achieved something that few people achieve. He was rabbi in Newport News, Virginia, and on the podcast, Rabbi Gebera says that. In Newport, he had influence on one family, the Hain family, H-A-I-N. Four boys from that family came to yeshiva together. Each one became a gem. One, you all know, was Jimmy Hain, Dr. Jimmy Hain. He passed away maybe during this past year. Zichrono Levrach, he was a year younger than I. He became a dentist at Tzaddik, a fabulous family, Tinek. Dr. Danny Hain, the head of nuclear medicine at Shari Tzedek, his entire family living here, Doya Sharon Yavarech, one of the sweetest individuals you'll ever meet. Kenny Hain, the rabbi of the Big Shul, Bet Shalom and Lawrence. And the fourth brother came to Israel. He was a youngster already and started learning. He never left. Kolel Chazonish and everything that came afterwards, published Sfarim. And that's all the result of Rabbi Nathan Bulman. So I just want to mention that. I also, this is a funny story. William Griertz, my student, Dr. Griertz, wrote to me. We were corresponding, I'll quote him in another minute within context of the lecture. But we were talking about the tragedies of all the people that died. And there's one person we knew in common. I taught his son, and he was a classmate of Dr. Gavirz at YU. We're talking about Dr. Turetsky, who passed away. He came back. When that first person from YU came back from Italy, they both were at the Daf Yomi Shir. Everyone at that Shir in Young Israel, New Rochelle, got sick. And Lo Aleinu, a totally healthy man, he was the one who didn't survive. A Yidit Tzadik, a fabulous doctor, fabulous children, has a son teaching at Shalavim, and another son, Michael McGershon, who founded the Shalavim School for Girls. So he tells me this funny story, which validates something I've said all along, that there's no language, Herbie, like Yiddish. The curses in Yiddish are overwhelming. So he tells the following story, how he grew up in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and one day he comes to the new shul they're davening in. A very, very wealthy Jew comes out of the shul into the hall where I'm arriving and says in Yiddish, pardon me for quoting this, the gabayim zal hadad amnisa mishuna in gayin in dread. To translate that is very hard, but the gabayim should drop dead with the worst type of illness and gayin dread, lie in the ground. So he asked the man, why are you so upset? A very, very wealthy man. And the man says, well, I came into shul, it's Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and they gave me a seat, Tzivishan Dr. Turetsky, that's the grandfather, the father of the Dr. Turetsky who died. The grandfather was a doctor. So one seat next to me is the medical doctor. The other seat is the undertaker of the city, Abe Green. And the guy was screaming, say, Vilnius, oh, stop. And they put me there. The doctor should treat me. I should drop dead. And Green should bury me. So I want to tell William Gavirz, I had the same story. In Maplewood, the gabbai once gave a wealthy guy, a prominent family, but a real shul Jew, gave him the aliyah of the klala by mistake. Was this guy cursing? Did he carry milzit the hagin in a klala? Oh, what went on? So I told the gabbai in the future, if you can't give it to the Baal Kore, if he's a Kohen, a Levi, give it to me. Give it to the Rav. Chas v'chalila, words of Torah should be a klala. But boy, we both have very similar stories with wonderful curse words in Yiddish. What a language, all right? That's the mila, the betichata, the joke you have to tell before you begin the serious lecture. We spoke last week about the microphone controversy. So Dr. Gavirz remembered the controversy well. He's not a youngster anymore. And he said, and he's a scientist, I have heard perhaps anecdotally that the Rav Zatzal said there are two types of rabbis. Rabbis who paskin to asar a microphone on Shabbat. These rabbis who asar don't know the science. And they're rabbis who are matir, who don't know the halacha, quote, end quote. Well, this is an anecdote. If it's correct, just think for one moment what the implication is. The implication is not that it's scientifically prohibited, not that there's a problem from that point of view, but it's not in the spirit of Shabbat. And I quote again, those who asa don't know science. Those who are matir don't know halacha. That would imply that the Rav would be opposed to any type of microphone. In other words, it's not within the spirit of Shabbat. You don't want to come into a shul and hear amplification and a microphone. It's not a weekday. So we can't paskin a halacha, but this has to be checked out. If it ever could be checked out, what was the Rav's real feeling? Why does this anecdote indicate scientifically it's mutter, but halachically it's asa? All right, but let's move on. We spoke about the changing of the guard, the shifting of eras, life moves on. Reb Simcha Levi already is second in command. The Rav takes over as chairman of the Halacha Commission. And this has many implications, as we will see later today. Today's shiur essentially will be devoted to the Rav, the questions he dealt with. He was very active in the original period, like 52, 53, 54, 55, 56. Later on, the RCA already runs on its own steam, and Izzy Klavan knows exactly what the Paskin, he knows the Rav intimately, but these initial years are very crucial. The last tremendous problem that we dealt with last week was civil marriage, and it fits right in with yesterday's shiur. Civil marriage is a problem that we cannot resolve. It's tremendous machloket haposkim. When you have Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, and I have to tell you, Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, and this was never published. It's not that the Rav published his viewpoint, but I can tell you these two ears, this mouth, these eyes, I discussed this with Rebbe in 78 in great detail. And he agreed essentially with Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. He would hold you need a get. Rabbi Moshe on the other hand was matir. There were other gedolei haposkim who were matir. And ultimately, going back to the Shach, the Kutas HaShach I quoted to you yesterday, the Shach says, b'shas ha'dechak, you can be samach even on one shita, even a shita dekuya, if the Rav who's paskening feels it should be that way. So halacha l'maisa, the RCA answered, feel this choice. We can't say who's right, Rav Henkin or Rav Feinstein, but let the individual Rav decide. Halacha l'maisa today, what I mentioned last week, is absolutely correct. I don't believe there's a Beis Din in the world, from the Eder Charedit to every other Beis Din, that would be the ever declare kids mamzerim if the mother remarried without a get. And this is a great salvation, because in Israel we have a kibbutz goliot. You take the balei tshuva. I don't know what the percentage is, but Stephen, I'm willing to bet that among the Anglo balei tshuva, 20% at least have serious shaylot of this nature. And b'nieved we can be mater. The kid is not a mamza. The Russian emigration aliyah. There's no question this problem comes up half the time, I would say. People treated marriage very lightly in Russia. The way it's treated today, lower Langdon, in our circles too, God have mercy what's happened to the Jewish people outside of communist Russia. But in Russia, it's not like America. America, a boy and girl, 19, 20 years of age, can go to a hotel, can go to a motel. There's a big house. They have their own room. In Russia, you had to get married, otherwise you had no place to live. People were forced to share apartments. So if you got married, the Russian government was obligated to find a room for you. So people got married at 20, at 22, they outgrew their spouse, they got divorced civilly, remarried again. Later, when they became Balei Tshuva, they took marriage seriously. And this can be elaborated on, but not for now. All right, but let me go further. Here, one problem came up with many variations where you see the Rav, a tremendous conservative with a small c. And this question actually, until today, we haven't resolved it on many levels. We pick up a sitter. All right, you don't have to be a great Talmid Chacham to understand. There are various levels to the Siddur. Some of it are Tehillim, some of it are Pesukim from the Torah, Yashir, the structure described by Chazal, Shema Yisrael, Shmoneh Esrei, etc., etc. But then there are many additions. This morning is Monday, Behurachum, Yechap Heavon. It's a long Tachnun. That evidently was added on during the Crusades. Shabbos morning, Yukum Pukum, the Reshi Metifta, Bavel. Rabbi Reuben got a, remember he challenged me, why do we have to say Bavel? All right, they just gave them unleavened. If it really bothers him, let him say the Reshi Yeshiva in Medina Yisrael, Ubetocha Golash Shel Hayom. I mean, it's not the end of the world if you don't mention the word Bavel. But there are various additions. You take the keynote. The keynote, the Rebbe used to elaborate in Boston. What can I tell you? I was there in 78. I was there again in 80. He could go all day. He'd go from 9 in the morning to 2, 3 in the afternoon. I don't know where the man got the koach. And every keynote, he would explain to you when it was written and who wrote it and what it was written about. And there are various layers, various episodes. You take what we say on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the piyut, again, various times. Can you add on to the tefillah today? And this comes up, we'll see in a minute, following the Holocaust. It comes up, the State of Israel, Yom HaTzmur. I'm going to show you a treasure in my possession, the first Yom HaTzmur. A little marks, I call it, put out by the chief rabbinate in the early 50s. Here it is. What can you do? What can you add? You should know the Rav was totally opposed to any addition. The truth of the matter is that if the Rav would have had his way, and he influenced Menachem Begin took the stand too in public and he was criticized, there wouldn't be a Yom HaShoah. The Rav felt, and Menachem Begin, I don't know what a great London Menachem Begin was, but he was a brisker, that's for sure. You all know that it's, by the way, I saw the story told, and it's not the one I heard from the Rav. The story I heard from the Rav was that when Theodor Herzl died, all the Rabbanim in Europe, those that were anti-Zionist, and they were the overwhelming majority, I said, anyone giving a hesped for Herzl. And Reb Chaim Brisker, in Brisk, he asked on all shuls, no word about Herzl. So the story I heard was that Menachem Begin's father went and established a new shul. And in that shul, he was maspid Herzl. And they said, how do you do it? And he answered, this shul was nicht gegründet geworden. It wasn't established when he asked. I established the shul after Reb Chaim asked. So I'm allowed. The chayrim is not chal on this shul. But Menachem Begin and the Rebs said the same thing, exactly the same thing, that we have Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is the day of mourning. Tisha B'Av is the day when we mourn the Crusades, when we mourn the Khmelnytsky massacres, when we go back and mourn Churban Bayit Rishon, Churban Bayit Sheni. So you wear Yom HaShoah. But to make a separate day for Yom HaShoah, they were both intrinsically opposed. All right, we'll come to next week's Shir on Sunday. You can ask me the question again. And believe me, I can deal with it and I have a very powerful answer. But it's not for now. The Rav was very conservative. So one of the first questions he got, believe it or not, was the Pesach Seder. Ah, the Pesach Seder. You open your door, and what he was saying, all the non-Jews should drop dead. By the way, many good, fine rabbis wrote apologetics. I remember reading this Rabbi Young, that you cannot condemn the Jews, that a human being, when Baumai Madnafish, they have to let out their feelings, and they've gone through so much suffering and murder. So people proposed that they should add on to Shvalchach Matcha, they should make a Yiska service what Hitler did. Now remember, this is when the blood was very fresh. We're talking the early 50s, and this question came to the Rav, and the Rav was totally opposed. He said, we've gone through so much persecution, so much torture. And the Rav mentioned the Crusades, the Chmielnytsky massacres. What do you want to do? You stop the Seder and you're going to go through a long litany of those who oppressed, tortured, killed the Jews? No, Shvachach Makar, that's what we have in the Haggadah, that's what Minig Yisrael is, that is sufficient. That takes care of all this persecution. And that was the Rav's answer, and it carried the day. The few sentences of pour forth thy rod served a purpose far better than the proposed synthetic prayer. That's the Rav's language I'm quoting. By the way, this makes Louis Bernstein's book very valuable because most of what I'm quoting today we don't have from the Rav. I'll mention later what we do have, but it's not from this early period. As I mentioned, all this got lost when the RCA moved and moved and moved. All this got lost in the process. But then we come to the issue that haunts us until today. We have Hanukkah, we have Purim, we have Tisha B'Av. Chazal gave us an approach, what we daven, what we add, what we say, al hanisim, when do we say Hallel, when don't we say Hallel, comes Yom HaTzmaut, what do we say? What do we do? And Yom HaTzmaut is, I don't have to tell you, I say the longer you live in Israel, the more you realize how much you have to celebrate Yom HaTzmaut. From afar, you know, as a kid growing up, I used to think, HaGadolim HaShev Arif, these Israeli leaders, Ben Gurion and Weizmann and Ben Zvi, and oh, Golda Meir. And then you come in Aliyah and you see the reality. You have to be strong to keep an optimistic outlook. And yet, with all that's gone on and what all that I've lived through in the last 51 years, difficult to comprehend how great the miracles are here, that even at this very moment, when you hear the news, I don't want to say we're over the pandemic, but we certainly are ahead of the rest of the world. And remember, we're a country that tourism, people coming, going, percentage-wise, infinitely larger percentage than the United States, than Canada, than Australia, than New Zealand, and that's what spread it so quickly. And even with China, we had so much going, so much business and relations, and wow, and hechsherim and factories, people going from here to there to give hechsherim, etc. It's unbelievable. So it comes Yom HaTzmaut, that's Rechem Lodot LaKadosh Baruch Hu. What we thought the Israeli army, I remember Reed Washington, I described my shock when I'm a volunteer in the Yom Kippur War and I meet the soldiers and I take a look, the same dummies, jerks that I meet in the bank, that I meet in the makolet, that I meet in the government offices, here they are, the real soldiers. So I finally asked, I was giving lectures, so I asked Rav Levy, he's not alive anymore, Yiddit Tzadik from the Rabbanut HaTzvah Yid, I said, this is Tzva HaGanal Yisrael, Eilu HaChayalim Shel Arola, Aleilu Anachnu Somchim. He said, Al Tidag, Anachnu Kan B'Kav HaSheni, B'Kav HaRishon, Yesh HaChayalim HaMitiyim. You follow me? This is the second line of defense. Further down, facing Jordan, those are the real soldiers. So, all right, well, what do you do? How do you follow? And you have to know, twice, once in the 60s and once in the 70s, the Rav got hysterical because he came into YU. He was living in YU already. He was in the dorm and he's davening with the minyan. And they were following Kibbutz Adati. Kibbutz Adati, it's much more extreme. Today it's more centrist. But if you take Torah of Avodah, those of you who know what's going on in Israel, the inner workings, Torah V'Avoda, I couldn't believe my eyes. They're one of the parties that petitioned the Supreme Court to allow chametz into the hospitals on Pesach. I mean, these are people that lost all concept of what Yiddishkeit is about, the democracy, liberal rights like America. They, many states now had to take off the requirement to wear masks because there were riots on the street, that you're forcing the people to do something against their will. It's inconceivable the way they think. But this is Torah V'Avoda. Chametz and Hatnu, you won't have kashrut in any hospital. Once chametz goes in, how can you watch everything happening, every room? Oh, Hashem Yerachem, I hope that it's overthrown and that our politicians know what they have to do. But anyway, be it as it may, the Kibbutz Adati went very far. And one day the grub walks in, and it might have been a Sunday, might have been a Wednesday, might have a Tuesday, a day when there's no Kriyat HaTorah, and it's Yom HaTzmut, and they're laying in the Torah with bracha. And of course, you can make a whole argument about Tisha B'Av, we lay in the Torah, right or wrong, had a special Kriya. Why not in Yom HaTzmut have a separate special Kriya? But there's only one problem. We lack Chazal, we lack a focal authority, we lack a Sanhedrin. Can't do it, Bismarck has said. Hallel, everyone today says Hallel with a bracha. Who made the Tatarim say Hallel? All right, I can give a whole shiur proving you can say Hallel with a bracha. The Gemara in Sakhama, this Tachet Kuftet Bab, that if there's a neish, you have to say Hallel. All right, I say Hallel without a bracha. I can't, on the Talmud of the Rav, the normal fun of Shira Hadasha, and I say Hallel. But I know my grandchildren, my sons-in-law, my grandchildren all say Hallel with the bracha. Hallel at night, then you go further. This miracle is so great. Hallel at night. Why don't we say Hallel? Hallel, Pesach night. Some of us say Hallel. Why not the Yom HaTzmut night? What is it? Pesach night? That alone, who knows if you're allowed to say. I mean, I tell you the tremendous machloket. Can you say Hallel? Can't you say Hallel? But Yom HaTzmut, suddenly at night, Hallel. You take a Shefi Yanu. I remember Rav Goren in debating with others. I remember Rav Shem was debating, I believe, with Rav Jolti. I knew both of them very, very well. Goren I also knew. And Rav Goren said, Min kestanaya hemti, you buy a new shirt. You make a shekion on a shirt. We have a state of Israel. We shouldn't make a shekion. That's what Rav Goren said. All right, we're wealthy people on a new shirt. I don't believe any of us make a shekion. Raise your hand if you make a shekion on a shirt. I don't think so. But all right, on a jacket, we make a shekhiyanu, it's a chashuv beged, I understand, fine. But all right, the state of Israel, Rav Goren thinks, right, make a shekhiyanu, can we make it again? All this haunts us. So this came up with the Rabbanut HaRashit with the Mizrahi in America. And here you have to understand what I've said all along, and if you've lived it, you know just what I'm saying. When I was growing up, 90% of Shul Yidden were Mizrahi people. Mizrahi was very powerful. Agudat Yisrael, a handful of survivors, people in Brooklyn, Williamsburg, but not beyond. Today in America, Mizrahi is nothing. They're trying to resuscitate it, and Corona came along and killed the attempts at resuscitation, as we've spoken about with the couple, the mayor couple coming home. But our good is everything. All right, there are many reasons why. The simplest reason is no one succeeded like Mizrahi. All the future leaders of Mizrahi went to Israel, and Kanai and Hara, we're only sitting here because Mizrahi people came in Aliyah, myself included, 51 years ago, and we changed the course of Torah history in the state of Israel. We certainly contributed to the major change of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Avram Rav Avram Silvich, and go name by name. The children, grandchildren, they're all here. Aguda, right, Baruch Hashem. And today Aguda is moving in a good path. Halavai shekulam yalu ad sabarina. But in the early 50s, Mizrahi was very powerful. And they contacted the Rabbinical Council of America, and they wanted the RCA to send out this Machzor, I call it, what to do on Yom Ha'atzmaut. Now, this comes from the chief rabbinate. Imagine you're the Rav and you're getting this. I'm reading to you. Halichot Hayom, Yom Ha'atzmaut Habeinu Hagim La'asoto Le'Yom Simcha Me'Erev Ad Erev. Habeinu Hagim La'Hafsik Melachtam Lifnei Shkiat Hachama. Lino'ol Batei Esek. Lirchots Melubosh Big Day Yontet Le'Chavet Hayom. La'olam Al-Yasa Adam Shum Melacha. Sheyesh Bo Ma'amatz Otircha. Biyom Atzmaot. Ale im kein chayta melechet davar ha'avud o tzorech harabim o tzorech hayom atzmaot. I can go on, etc. No, could you imagine the Rav? Jay, you knew the Rav? Joey, you knew the Rav well? Could you imagine the Rav reading this, what the reaction would be with Rebbeinu Shalom? Torrential storm rains. What's going on? What's this? Cholamoyd? Sudokadushat Hayom? Kogman Musaf? I mean, the Rav is right, halachically speaking. No, it's very nice. Baruch Hashem, today in Israel, everything closes down, not because they want to, but because it's the law of the land. But on the other hand, you talk about Aisha Malacha. I mean, imagine if this would be written today, if my grandchildren were writing it, Yom Ha'atzmaut Chayavim Lasot Mangal. Mi Shelo Osem Mangal Hu Kofe Bi'ika Mechalel Shem Hashem Umvayesh Et Tifedet Medina Yisrael. That's what my grandchildren would be writing today. But I you should know, we never, my wife and I don't make mangalim. My wife had taught me to eat the basic heaven. I'm mother, yet my mother-in-law, healthy food. But the last few years, we always went to my grandson in the Shomron. He made a mangal, and we are the whole family. And this was a key of Yom Ha'atzmaut. All right, this is minor. Then you open up, say the hatfila, al pi takanot harabanut harashit liYisrael. And here you have 3 pages of Mizmorim. All right, nothing wrong with it. But then you come from Lechadodi, Migdash Melechim Alucha, Hitori Hitori, Lote Voshi Veloti Komi, Yuminu Smoti Frosi. Kolina Yeshua Vilayam Sadik Mai. This is beautiful, I have no objection. But to make it part of Tfila, you can understand the Rav very upset. Then you daven Maariv, and then it becomes Yom Kippur. Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim, Shema Yisrael, Mamish, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Melech, and on, and finally, I would imagine this irked the Rav the most. Tkiyat HaShofa, Leil Chag Atzmaut. And after the Tiyat HaShofa, singing and dancing, Lishana Haba B'Yerushalayim HaBnuya. And then it goes on and on. This was a real service. This was more than 1 hour. Shir HaMalot, but not Stam Shir HaMalot. Everyone has a different tune for Shir HaMalot. All right, Baruch Hashem. Shir HaMalot, Shah B'Mangina HaTik. My voice, Bishop Tarek. Oh boy, beautiful. And then call Hakahal Shah Anima Minbemna Shlema Beviat HaMashiach. And it goes on and on with Smirat. And then it gives you the addendum for the morning and the tefillah l'shalom hamedina and the tefillat hatshuvah and a special mizmah for Yom Ha'atzmaut. Beautiful, but halachically speaking, Vasadik, Vasadik. That's a word that Reb Heschel uses in his volumes, and they was criticized either right Hebrew or right Yiddish. But the new generation doesn't know what Vasadik means. Vasadik, very, very weak, water-like. It's not whiskey. It's not strong. It's not powerful. It's not good wine. Part of this, I must say, did become part of the surface. And Yom HaTzmut, when I daven at my children's shul, they do say from the Lechadodi, the Tov, who can object? Hidori, Hidori, Loti Bosi, the Loti Kolmi, just because we say it Friday night, doesn't invalidate it from being said. As long as we don't say Lechadodi Lekrat Kala on a Wednesday night or a Tuesday night for Yom HaTzmut. This service, the Rav was asked, and he was opposed. The Rav ruled against the service conducted in non-halachic fashion. The Hallel may not be recited at night except on Passover, when it is part of the Exodus account. It is customary not to recite Psalms before midnight, before David HaMelech wakes up. He further advised that a rabbinical group should not disseminate material prepared by another group, particularly a lay group. And you see what the Rebbe is saying there, this is being pushed by Mizrahi, and Mizrahi was not exactly a rabbinic body. It was lay people, essentially, who believed in religious Zionism. So the Rav is very negative at this time. We're going to come back later. At a later date, the Rav is more yielding, and he explains why. But we all understand the problem. This problem haunts us until today. We don't have a Sanhedrin, Halavai. I always say when the time will come, the Yom HaTzmut service will resemble Tisha B'Av. It'll be the opposite of Tisha B'Av. Just as Tisha B'Av, we say Kinot, and the laning is very sad and about destruction and klala. Yom HaTzmut, we need a laning of bracha v'hatzlacha. We need a haftorah of kibbutz galyot. But all that can't be done without a Sanhedrin, without a focal authority, without the continuity of Chazal. But until that time, we can make slight additions. There's nothing wrong with singing Shir Malo to the tune of HaTikva. I have to be honest with you. I can't get through HaTikva without crying. Impossible. Impossible for me to get through HaTikva without crying. And I'm not the only one. I saw at many fallout ceremonies, which I attended, my grandchildren, Kenai and Hara. I'm not the only one crying. Saw others. So there's some things that have become part of us that, all right, nothing wrong with Ani Mamin, B'Viat Goel, the Emun Shlema, B'Viat Mashiach, etc. Nothing wrong, nothing wrong. But the ultimate, to have a little marsa, we're not there yet. And I can understand the Rebbe, particularly a laning from the Torah on a day that there's no laning, Brachot Levatala. I can understand his anger. It wasn't against religious Zionism, it was against Amratzot in the name of religious Zionism. Now, a very interesting issue came up where, again, today it's like ancient history, but then I remember as a kid, I was in high school already. I knew a high school kid is, you're the smartest kid in the world when you're in high school. I think that's your ultimate. Your brain is sharper than ever. That's the mechuapi. You're a young kid. And you have good, generally in high school, you have good teachers. College, you have professors. They think they know everything. They're cynical. They're smarter than anyone else. They're not always the best role models as human beings. But in high school, I don't know. I found it the greatest experience. I knew that even though I was a kid of 14, 15, I knew what was going on already. So 1954, I think we're all of American origins here, more or less, some Canadian. 1954 was 300 years since the first Jews set foot in the Western Hemisphere, in New Amsterdam. And it was a big event, the Terrace and Tenerife, if I'm pronouncing it right. Correct me if I'm wrong, if you can correct me right now. But 300 years, and they have tremendous ideas came up. Let's talk about one of the first ideas was, in honor of that event, we have to come up with a new modern Anglo translation of the Bible. Until then, the translations were based upon the St. James Version. Later, you had Isaac Lisa, who probably was the first person to fight publicly for Torah, for Shabbat and Kashrut, Tarek Mishpacha, and all that went with it in the United States. And you had his translation, you had a JPS translation from the First World War period, but now we have to do something. American Jewry is on the map. And you have to remember, Anglo Jewry, the British people gave us Sansino. That was some achievement. We're talking about a small number of Jews compared to the United States, and they gave us Sansino. We now, let's do the Bible and redo it. And they turned to Teddy Adams, Theodore Adams, the rabbi of Ohr HaTzedek on the Upper West Side. There's a picture of Rabbi Adams in my work on, I believe it's in Washington, it's in Washington. It may also be in the Rav. It's an interesting picture. You got to read what I write about it. I was critiqued that I made the Rav taller than he was, that the Rav was never 6 foot, 6 foot one. And Rakefet looked up to the Rav, so he saw he was not only great in learning, but great in height. And in that picture, which was sent to me by Rabbi Adams' grandson, Zamnik, I thank him immensely, you'll see how tall the Rav was in his prime, and I was not off base. It's only later that, like we all grow older, we shrink a little, we're idigabagian, you know, back problems, etc. Thank God we're alive and we can talk about it. So Teddy Adams was present. He was a real, do you remember Theodore Adams? He was like a linebacker, 6'2", 6'3", tall, wide, strong. If there ever was a person who conveyed strength, it was Teddy Adams. So JPS turns to him. A few words on Jewish Publication Society. Jewish Publication Society began as an offshoot from the more conservative element in the United States. It was not reform, but it was far from orthodox. And ultimately, JPS morphed into basically conservative Judaism with a capital C. Solomon Greisel was the editor at this time. Later, he's succeeded by Chaim Potok. Chaim Potok is a classic example of what JPS was about. David in Hollywood, JPS represented conservative Judaism. And now Solomon Greisel turns to Teddy Adams and tells him, we want you to participate with the reform, with the conservative. All right? Well, you get a question like that, you turn to the Rav automatically. What are we supposed to answer? Orthodox, conservative, reform. All three divisions, tripartite division of the Jewish people. We're all putting out this translation together. The sales possibilities are overwhelming. You put out something like that, you can talk in terms of 1 million sales, 2 million sales. All right, that's one question. The other question, which was the fallout of all that was happening in American Jewry, was 1954. There's going to be the 300th anniversary, and they want to have a special Sabbath which will be in honor of this event. And every rabbi will preach in honor of the event in every temple, in every synagogue, in every shul. And it'll be a special service with additional prayers and prayers for the president and the government and the United States, and thanksgiving to God that America has been a refuge to save so many millions of Jewish people. And these two questions come to the Rebbe. Okay. The Rebbe, who was well-read, well beyond Jewish matters, said right away that the Protestants, the liberal ministers, just put out a new translation. And he says, this translation, what they're talking about, is going to follow the new Protestant liberal translation infinitely more than it will follow Chazal. And I'm quoting the Rav now. They had recently revised the English text of the Bible to satisfy the, quote, so-called modern scientific demands for a more exact rendition in accordance with the latest archaeological and philological discoveries. You see, this ties in with yesterday's Shia, Kitvei Yad, manuscripts, discoveries, archaeological, philological. The Rav could not see how the RCA could lend its name to a translation which was at least influenced, if not totally, but partially, by higher biblical criticism. I do not believe that our presence will make them change their basic policy, which is an exponent of a secularistic philosophy of Judaism. Rabbi Soloveitchik charged that JPS was seeking approval and sanction and not advice or opinion from the RCA. It would appoint, listen to this, this the Rav, it would appoint a committee of experts and scholars who, not being able to understand a single Talmudic passage and deeply steeped in appalling ignorance of halacha, will superciliously override all our objections and suggestions, stamping them as pure orthodox prejudices and traditionalism. And wow, you heard that paragraph? If I would read the paragraph today, let's say we have a group in front of us from Satma, Lakewood, YU, Chovevei Torah, I would read that paragraph. Who issued this statement? Who spoke these words that deeply steeped in appalling ignorance of halacha, who will not be able to understand a single Talmudic passage? 99% of the people would say that's Rabbi Aaron Cutler speaking. It's the Satmar Rav speaking. Rav Soloveitchik, Mandecha Shemei, impossible. So please revise your image of the Rav. I cannot tell you how difficult it is to capture the Rav. When I came out with my two volumes and later with the documentary on the Rav, The Lonely Man of Faith, you cannot believe all the criticism I got. Some people wanted to tear me apart. You described the Rav as a Rosh Yeshiva, as a philosopher, a modern individual. Others want that you described the Rav, went to university, got a doctorate, New World philosophy, mathematics, disgrace. All he knew was Teirin, Paiskim, and it's such a, Rebbe is very difficult to describe. The best definition is a guy named Rakefet came up with it, a Torah Jew in the Western world. Baruch Hashem, Tova Lichtenstein gave a, almost word by word the same description of her father a few weeks ago and interviewed over Zoom. But this is the Rav. This is the Rav. Let's be honest. You're dealing with Reform rabbis, conservative rabbis, scholars. Open up a Gemara, Zagashir, Fashtaytepis, Zagida, Rashi, Taisvus, Rambam, Arivit. Give us a Devar Halacha. Try to understand something. I don't know what language you're talking. I can tell you in this very house, on this very table that I'm speaking on, and my notes are on, this table right underneath me. So one time, I told this in class a number of times over the decades, I had a wonderful Talmud from the right-wing world, a very prominent right-wing family, a Lakewood family, and he once had the misfortune of hearing me speak, and he made up his mind he's going to be my Talmud, and Kachave, wonderful Talmud. So one time, Friday night, at that time, we still made Shabbos here. It's not like later years where it's our children. So he said, Rebbe, I have a girl that I met. She's studying in Hebrew Union College to be a rabbi. Can I bring her? I said, oh, the rabbi, it'll be interesting to meet her and see what she's studying. So the girl come, nice girl, fine girl, studying to be a rabbi, Hebrew Union from Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati, now here in Israel, I think they require it. And do you study Talmud? Oh, of course, we study Talmud. I'm, an advanced class. I said, well, what do you study? And she told me, they take an Agada from the Talmud. Let's say the Agada of Rabbi Akiva, where Moshe Rabbeinu, he doesn't understand the Shia, the Gemara in Menachot I'm referring to. And finally, Rabbi Akiva has to say that it's halacha l'Moshe Mishinai, Moshe Rabbeinu felt better. They take that Agada, they analyze it for 4-5 months. The second half of the term, they'll take an Agada of Shimba Yochai coming out of the cave and analyze it from everything, historically, philologically, environmental control, and what will go on. And this is what they call advanced Gemara. And this is in the year, it was 10, 12 years ago, let's say, when already people know Gemara and the New York Times knows Gemara and you have to study and learn and see a mashash and tens of thousands and come out and learn and 7 years and already cab drivers in America know, policemen know, all the anecdotes from the see a mashash. So the Rav is absolutely right. The Rav says, yet I am not ready to commission the modern secularists to remedy an ancient evil. The Rav says, I know the translation we have is not perfect. The translation we have in English in many places is not correct. But I'm not ready to commission the modern secularists. And then the Rav says something else. This becomes very important, as we will see in future lectures. Yes, I'd be willing to join the project if they would grant veto rights to the RCA representatives, a highly improbable arrangement. All right, veto rights. Does that sound familiar? Joining Reform Orthodox Conservative Synagogue Council, what was the Rav's demand? Veto rights. And Synagogue Council, to the day it disbanded, had a clause that any decision on halacha, Jewish practice, etc., must be unanimous. What does that mean? The Orthodox have veto rights. Obviously, it couldn't continue indefinitely. It disbands. We'll talk about the 1990s. The reason is very simple. American Orthodoxy has moved much more right, and the reform movement has moved infinitely more left. But veto rights is something that the Rav held by, and we'll come back to it. See, the Rav is very difficult to define. You have to have known the Rav intimately to understand who this man was. To say, like, someone wrote a whole article, his own nephew, which essentially stated in tradition, the Rav was like a Baron Cutler. The difference was the Rav came to America 9 years earlier. The Rav came in 1932, and Rav Aaron came in 1941. It's not so. The Rav was not like Rav Aaron Cutler. There were many similarities between them, but the Rav was a lot broader and a lot more, and there are many more layers to the Rav. He was a much more structured person, Torah Jew, Western world. But here you see the Rav. There's no compromise. This is the heart of Torah, the heart of belief. Now, Rabbi Adams expresses another fear. And this was really a real fear in the 50s. Again, it's not a fear today because we're much bigger, stronger, powerful. We have succeeded against all odds. Just look at the last Siyum Shas across the world. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands participated. And who could ever believe 3,000 women participating in a Siyum Shas? Among them, Lamdaniyot Muvhakat. The Breuer is no longer an isolated individual. The daughters of Rashi. The grandmother of the Mashal. I don't like these people who say women never learn Torah. I don't like these people who quote the Gemara and so they don't know what they're talking about. They don't understand the Gemara. You have to be a Lamdan and you have to be honest. But what we are privileged today, men, women, Rabbanim, Balabatim, Sheyurim, endless, go their apps, endless, go to the websites. There's so much Torah being taught, so much Dapyomi in every language. Ashreinu Shezachinu. All right, you want to be a Litvish critic? No, that's Heishni Slavin, it's Nishtin Amkus, it's not deep, they don't do this. Bina Shalom, not everyone can be a Litvak and learn the Daf with Alam of Farshim and understand, but it's disseminated, it's wide. Better people should daven up Ashrei and daven up Gemara than not daven Ashrei and not daven Gemara. Don't be critical, be positive. So Adams is saying to the Rav Rebbe, if we're left out, it's sad. We barely have a voice. No one knows of us. If we say no, we're closing the door. Listen to what the Rav says to him. Morty, I still miss the microphone in Chris. Okay. I notice, this is the Rav now speaking, I notice in your letter that you are a bit disturbed about the probability of being left out. Let me tell you that this attitude of fear is responsible for many commissions and omissions, compromises and fallacies on our part, which have contributed greatly to the prevailing confusion within the Jewish community and the loss of our self-esteem. Our experience of ourselves as independent identities committed to a unique philosophy and way of life. Of course, sociability is a basic virtue, and we all hate loneliness and dread the experience of being left alone. Yet at times, there is no alternative And we must courageously face the test. Maimonides of old was aware of such bitter experiences. And here what the Rebbe stated is axiomatic, basic to being a Torah Jew. At times we have to go against the trend. We have to go against the tide. We have to take positions that are not that popular. We don't have to compromise. We have to be firm, strong, and at moments it hurts. We have to walk away and bow our heads. We've gone as far as we can. We can't go any further. You know the Rav with the case of the Yoret to the Kohen, where she had made the Jewish boy frum, and as the Rav said, there's nothing I could do. She just had to walk away and start all over again. And at times, we have no choice. This is Torah. This is the big difference between us and Chovevei Torah and the Torah of the Avodah here. I'm still shaking to join in the challenge, go to the Supreme Court, which at times is no more than a court of Amei Haaretz Burim and Eino Yireim, and go and bring chametz into hospitals on Pesach in the name of democracy, liberalism, Western society. That's not Torah. That's not Judaism. That's not the way we can survive. It's not what we can transmit to future generations. And here the Rebbe is absolutely right. And he's telling Rabbi Adams, at times we have to put up with this bitter experience. What's interesting, he says, Maimonides of old. Where is referring to our Maimonides? So first of all, if you've learned Hilchot Deot, you know what I'm talking about. And you have to move away. You have to live in the desert. Maimonides is very extreme. We'll come to a discussion of the Rambam and Hilchot Deot when I deal with Satna Be'ezrat Hashem. I should get there with Briyut and health, and we should all be together in health and happiness, because it's not going to be tomorrow. But that Rambam, Hilchot Deot, very important. I need not tell you, if you know Moreh Nevuchim, it plays a major role in Moreh Nevuchim. But here the Rav, very, very down to earth, patting the shoulder of Teddy Adams. At times, we have to be alone, we have to retreat. And this is the Rav speaking, not the Baron Kotler, and not the Safmuruv. It's not the Lubavitcher Rebbe either, who may have been even more involved in the greater world than the Rav. But this is part of life. One has to have principles. We try our best when we can compromise. When we can't, we just have to walk away. I always boast that since 1961, I have never been involved in a machlokes. I had enough controversy my first year in the rabbinate to last a lifetime. And the David Goldust knows that better than anyone else, how deep that controversy goes until today. On the other side, not me. And I always say, what's pshat? You don't get involved in controversy. If I can compromise, I compromise. If halachically I see I cannot, hashkafically I see I cannot, so I walk away. You're entitled to your opinion, but please, I can't join with you. And that's the Rav. And I got that advice from the Rav time and time again. I have it in writing in Shilas. I asked him later in the rabbinate in Maplewood, New Jersey. But beautiful, beautiful advice. Halacha l'maisa, please, the Rav says, specify this viewpoint in your letter to Dr. Grazel and do not invent other pretexts for abstaining from this issue. Tell him the truth. Let him hear the truth. All right. I have to tell you, JPS, in retrospect, to me, they were very, very kind. And you all know I was privileged. My book on Bernard Rebbe was the first, everyone said it was the first Torah true book that they ever published. You know, all the books they published were basically conservative rabbis, reform rabbis. There was one exception, Rabbi Philip Goodman, who published so many volumes on the holidays. If I'm not mistaken, Yitzchak, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it was your father-in-law, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he published quite a number of books on the various holidays with JPS anthologies, collections, Chazal, Maimarim, Chassidus, Midrashim, etc. But the books dealing with substantive modern contemporary issues, my book was the first one, and I have to thank Chaim Potok. He gave me hints in writing that helped me. Saul Bernstein, who edited Jewish Life, used to say, when I get an article from Rothkopf, I don't have to do much work in editing it. And that I have a thank you to Chaim Potok. Okay. The other issue that Teddy Adams bothered the Rav on was the special prayer for 300 years in America. All right, the Rav didn't take Dr. Agus's approach. Dr. Agus's approach, I've told the story, they announced when I was a junior in college, there'll be a $50 bond prize for the best essay on Jewish history research. And I got involved in the research. It was the first article I ever published, an article that's been quoted and requoted. I republished it, etc. It's a fascinating topic, the visit of the three great rabbanim to America in 1924 to raise funds for the Center Relief Committee, Rav Cook, the Kovner Rav, Rav Avraham Dov Kana Shapiro, and the Lavush Mordechai, the Slabodka Rosh Yeshiva. What a fascinating study to do what they accomplished in America, Canada, 1924. So I did my research, I handed the article, and the committee decides mine is the best piece. I'm entitled to the $50 bond, which is $975 by today's standards. If Yomo would be around, he would confirm that. And Rabbi Dr. Agus gets up. He says, no, we cannot award this to Rothkopf. His work has nothing to do with Jewish history. There is no Jewish history in America. It is total assimilation and intermarriage. We want research on something constructive, positive, not on a country that all we have is negativism. So the Rav didn't take that approach. He didn't dismiss the 300th anniversary on that level, but he was quite upset. I'm quoting the Rav now. Proclamation of a day of prayer was the exclusive prerogative of the rabbinate, which should resent any intervention by lay groups. In my opinion, it was sheer arrogance on the part of the Centenary Committee to designate a Sabbath as a day of prayer without consulting the rabbinate. And here the Rav, very powerful. These were lay people. They have a committee. What makes them important? They're successful financially, academically, but these are not Rabbanim. These are not Gedolei Yisrael. And the Rav considered it arrogance. And on that level, he was opposed to going along with the general concept. Yes, we can celebrate 300 years. You want to know what Shabbat he would suggest? He said, Shabbos Chanukah. Shabbos Chanukah is the tradition, Chanukah HaMizbeach. All of you know when you study the history of yeshiva, such as Yeshivas Mitzchol Chanon, when they moved to East Broadway, they celebrated the week of Chanukah. When they moved uptown to Amsterdam Avenue, they celebrated the week of Chanukah. Fine, pick the week of Chanukah and celebrate it, Ere Mizmah, nothing wrong with it, Chanukah Tabayit, but celebrate it in a Taredic fashion. We shall act independently after our own fashion and manner and in full accord with the halacha. We must not assume the role of errand boys for any lay group which thinks it can order us to do what it deems advisable. And here you see the Rav putting down his foot. There's covered of the rabbinate, covered harabanut. Lay people cannot boss us around and tell us what to do. And here he says to Adams, and this becomes very crucial in understanding the Rav. He advises the rabbinical council, let me quote the Rav now, to discriminate between the political and social aspects and the religious moments of the projected plan. He urged the readiness to cooperate on the former levels, but not on the latter, not on the religious level. And what the Rav here is saying, this reflects his whole attitude later with synagogue council. When you talk about the public thoroughfare, politically, economically, socially, we are one. The Jews are one. We'll come to some very sharp quotes from the Rav, if not this week, next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. Religiously, we are not one. We have little in common with Reform and conservative Judaism. When you don't accept the Dvar Hashem Zu Halacha, when Halacha doesn't command absolute total obedience, then we're not in the same camp. And this is exactly what the Rebbe is answering. Fine, Klapei Chutz, they want to publish history books, they want to publish pamphlets, which they did, they want to publicize, they want to have meetings of the Hadassah women and B'nai B'rit and dedicate it to 300 years, fine. But please, don't give us a service in the shul which we will object to. We want to do it our way in consonance with the Dvar Hashem as practiced b'chaye olam narka b'tochenu throughout the ages. And the Rav said, absolutely, the week of Hanukkah, designated by the rabbis of old as a time for rejoicing and thanksgiving. Quoting the Rav now, we must also abstain from composing synthetic and meaningless prayers for that occasion. Let us leave this type of creativity to the liberal and semi-liberal rabbis. That's a synonym for conservative. The Psalms of David are good enough for us. That's what the Rav answered. I remember this vividly. I remember Rav Yosef Weiss, my Rebbe that year, quoting the Rav's answer to the RCA. There was more to the question. And this takes on a very contemporary significance, a problem that basically we have time and again. But there was more. Fine, you're going to make your own type of service in your shul, Hanukkah, Shabbos Hanukkah. But the Jews in America, the liberals, the semi-liberals, they want to do something in Washington, D.C. And there they want to invite non-Jewish individuals, politicians, laity, can we participate? And here the Rav, listen very carefully, because once again you come to the heart of the Rav's, the difficulty in trying to understand who he really is. He's living in two worlds. Interfaith celebrations were permissible, quote, as long as they will be held within the confines of secular activities. No joint worship, however, can be encouraged. Worship and dialogue with God is an inner experience most intimate, most personal, and most unique. Every community worships God in its own way. And this feeling, when you do it jointly, distorts the very essence of religious experience. So you see what the Rebbe is saying here. Doesn't this later become his famous essay, Confrontation? Remember, Yitz Greenberg, others wanted to go with the church, wanted to go to the Pope, wanted to get involved in interfaith dialogue. The Rebbe totally opposed confrontation. The same distinction, politically, socially, economically, we're all human beings. We're united. We can have a public event. We can quote a psalm that's indifferent to every, to meaning it has to be one type of religion. Universal. We come to participate. But the minute you get involved in a formal synagogue service, church service, and you have non-Jews speaking as well, praying as well, the Rebbe is opposed. And he said, they're describing the Rebbe now, though he strongly opposed joint religious services with the conservative reform, he agreed that the RCA would have to acquiesce to some type of event to be held on a national scale in Washington. Quote, since non-Jewish dignitaries will be invited, I deem it proper to participate. The Jewish community must appear to be united to the non-Jews. Nevertheless, the RCA should carefully review the program that we can agree with its contents. And you see, this is the difficulty of living according to the Rav. Very easy to be a right winger, very easy to retreat, very easy to go back to the ghetto. But to integrate on the greater Jewish scene and go one step further on the world scene, there's constantly tension, constantly the dialectical challenge. And this is what the Rav is answering. And this confrontation, these words that we just read, summarize the essay that appeared in Tradition, one of the Rav's earliest published writings that he allowed to be published, The Difference Between Within and Without. Klape chutz, klape pnim. And it comes up time and time again in the Rav's outlook. Now, this problem that he deals with is nothing new. How many of you live in England? How many of you, Jack, you sing God Save the Queen, right or wrong? The Queen is being inaugurated. What would be the word? They're crowning the new Queen. And they invite all the religious dignitaries. It's in a church. The chief rabbis have to go. Right or wrong? We're living with Gentiles. Didn't this come up a number of years ago? The most famous pulpit rabbi in the United States, Rabbi Haskell Lookstein, his father, calling his father, it's Rabbi Haskell Lookstein, who I know very well. And I can tell you, he's a Yiddish, he's a Frum Jew, 100%, raised wonderful children, he and his wife, Audrey. And they had this big affair in Washington. Obama has been elected. Jews are dancing with joy with the Gentiles. Mashiach is here. An Afro-American is elected president of the United States. Also probably the first Mohammedan ever elected president of the United States. And they had this service in a church in Washington, and Rabbi Lookstein went. And there was criticism, there was support. Once again, listen to the Rav. The Rav was willing, I quote, since non-Jewish dignitaries will be invited, I deem it proper to participate. And This is the Rav speaking. All right. Let's go one step further and end off. I'm watching the clock. You have Rabbi Bednash at 11:30. One step further. Correspondence continued between Rabbi Adams and JPS. And finally, they wrote to Solomon Grazel that they proposed placing Reb Chaim Heller on the committee that would deal with the new translation. And if he were placed on the committee and giving veto powers, he, the RCA, would agree to join. But I need not tell you, JPS did not accept it. Could you imagine Reb Chaim Heller, anyone else they would appoint, these would be midgets in the presence of the giant of the generation in the field of Shas, Poskim, Semitic languages, Bible, biblical criticism, Tanakh, Reb Chaim Heller. Didn't get off the floor, it didn't work. But that was the final proposal that the RCA made. So you see, these are very delicate questions. How much can we cooperate? How far can we go? We are part of the Jewish people. We are part of the Torah people. Where do we draw the line between the Torah people and the Jewish people? This is a haunting question. Yeah, even Satmar can't give you a clear answer. How come you relate to other Jews? How come you occasionally get Balei Tshuva? How come you take Belsa? They reach out today to other Jews. How do you talk to Jews? The Mechallel Shabbos, Ochlein Avelik in Frankfurt. Here you're criticizing the Lubavitcher. And here, where do you draw the line? Lakewood today, Outreach Kollelim. Why do you care what goes on in Kalamazoo, Michigan? Amira Rosh Chabura just wrote a piece on Rabbi Wolf, who died of coronavirus in Hanover, Germany. And he said, I'm not a Lubavitcher. I don't agree with their viewpoint. I'm a Litvisher. But this man taught me what Mesiras Nefesh is about. And did you read it or not? He related the conversation that he came to Hanover, whatever the reason was. I think it was a medical reason. He had to be there. Someone had to be there. And he's in Hanover, and he contacts this Lubavitcher. He heard that there's an outpost of Lubavitch there. And this Lubavitcher took care of him, so he had food and drink and where to daven. And he looks at this Lubavitcher, he, his wife, his children, he says, you're crazy, you're idiots. How do you live in a place like this? No Yiddishkeit, no Chavruta, what kind of children? What are you doing, man? And Rabbi Wolf says, you're absolutely right, but the Rebbe taught us that God's presence has to be felt all over, wherever there are Jews. And there are some Jews in Hanover, Germany. And he said, wow, I got a lesson in Mesirat Nefesh. I could never, ever do it. Now, where do you draw the line? Charlie Liebman makes this point in his famous article in the Judaism in the early 60s, Sociological Study of Orthodoxy or Modern Orthodoxy in the United States. He says, where do you draw the line? We all have to, all of us agree. Torah is Torah. Torah demands, commands obedience. And every Jew who's a Jew halachically, we're part of Am Yisrael. If he's Mechallel Shabbos, it's partially my fault, partially I'm to blame. I didn't influence him, and I suffer as a result because I'm also a chelik shel Am Yisrael. Isn't this with the Knesset, what goes on with Kashrut and Shabbat? Buses are, what do you care? Buses are, no, we're part of Am Yisrael. If those buses are riding on Shabbos, if those Shabbos are Behesia, it's Chilul Shabbos that I have a part in as a citizen paying taxes as part of the Jewish people living in this very delicate, delicate problems. Where do you draw the line? But this is the Rav. The Rav remained constant. Klapei Chutz, Klapei Pnim. political, economic, sociological, and religious Torah commitment. And these answers are not easy to follow, but by now, the Rav is the dominant figure in RCA. Al piv yishak kol davar. So to reiterate, we have a lot more to do. Fabulous, interesting material, and one day we're going to reach the lecture on the lowest point in the history of RCA. Dov, you're not responsible. You were still a kid in school in short pants at the time, but you're going to cry along with everyone else. We're going to get there. Yezrat Hashem. So to reiterate, first of all, I want to thank everyone for participating. The screen seems to be filled. So I thank you very much for honoring me with your presence. I thank all those across the world who will later pick up the lecture. And Morty, just nod your head. It'll be passed on. It'll be uploaded on whyutorah.org.
Yeah, within a couple hours.
Okay, good, because I don't see Ellie here. I don't see Effie.
Send it to him.
Okay, whatever. You know what you're doing. I appreciate it. And today's lecture, you can call Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Joseph B. Smorenger, Rabbeinu, the Rav, as chairman of the Halachic Commission. Okay? And what did we do today? So we picked up where we left off last week, dealing with the initial questions that Mori Rebbe received and what his answers were. Essentially, it deals with our relationship with Reform and Conservative, our relationship with the general community. There are even overtones of our relationship with non-Jews. Be'ezrat Hashem, next Sunday at 9:30, we pick up just where we left off. We have to finish out the Chazon Ish and polish the thoughts that we expressed yesterday, and end it off, and we can say, Davar v'lo chatzi davar. From there, we pick up on a very interesting question. We all wear glasses. Could you imagine a world where you wouldn't be allowed to wear glasses on Shabbat? So let's think about that and what you can carry, can't carry. We have what to do. We'll see the Vilna Gaon as well. Part of our discussion yesterday, there's never a dull moment when we study Torah Hashem Tanima. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya. Morty, open it up if there are any questions. We still have 3 minutes left.